When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This program contains dramatizations of real events. Some names and timelines have been changed. Listener discretion is advised.
Gitche Manitou is a state park in northwest Iowa and South Dakota. Growing up, we always heard that it was a scary place because of what happened out there.
Now it's this place of evil and death. Now you're always looking over your shoulder. Is there going to be somebody coming out of the dark, coming out of the trees? Who's out there?
We had no idea who did it. We had no idea what the motivation might be.
I couldn't understand how something like that happened. It's just like your whole world just turned upside down in a flip of a switch.
What happened out at Gitche Manitou, it was a real life nightmare. Something that sticks in people's mind is why they fear being in a secluded area alone.
Sioux Falls was a smaller community and everybody knew everybody.
Back then, it was just a typical small town. Growing up, it was myself, my mom and dad, my oldest brother, Bill, and then Mike was the middle child. Mike was a good big brother. We didn't interact a whole lot because he was 5 years older than me. I was the youngest, I was the baby.
He got me on that one.
He had his own friends and did his own thing, but when he was home and we hung out and stuff, it was really good.
Don't forget your bucket.
Yep.
I made that for you, Mom.
Yep.
Can you see out of it?
I was a ghost for Halloween that year. I had a sheet over me with eyeballs. So he had actually taken my friend and I trick-or-treating. The memory just sticks with me so well. He would stay on the sidewalk with my girlfriend and I would go up and get her candy and stuff. And he had to take time away from his friends and stuff too to take us. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad he was able to do that with us. That was a good memory for me to have. He was being a good big brother. And then the innocence of being a 10-year-old was all gone after that. It ended right there.
On the morning of November 18th, 1973, a couple was test driving a car, and they decided they were going to drive through Gitche Manitou State Park one last time before the snow started flying. As they're driving up, they see something laying alongside the road in the grass. Driver pulls over, the man tells his wife to stay in the car, and he gets out. As he got closer, he realized it was something very serious and very bad.
Things like that didn't happen in a rural community. In fact, the sheriff didn't even have real police tape in his vehicle. He'd never needed to rope off a crime scene before. When something like this happens in a small town, they call the Bureau of Criminal Investigation, Iowa BCI, and they call for backup to help investigate.
It was somewhat of an eerie feeling when we got there. When you first drive in the driveway to the park, there's a little parking area right there. And off to the left is some higher weeds. That's where the bodies have been drugged to. This is pretty gruesome compared to some of the other crime scenes that I'd seen. There was quite a bit of blood.
The bodies are laying all three face down. They can tell by the looks of the wounds that they've been shot with shotguns, the size of the wounds, the amount of blood, and, you know, the grass is sprayed with blood. They identified the victims through their wallets. They had IDs still on them. 18-year-old Stuart Beatty, Stuart's younger brother, 14-year-old Dana, and 15-year-old Mike Hadrath. 17-year-old Roger Essam was found down by the abandoned campsite.
There was a guitar sitting by a tree. They did have a half of a marijuana cigarette, so we assumed they were down there playing a guitar and just having a good time.
12-gauge. 20-gauge.
16-gauge.
We saw that there were at least three different types of shotgun shells being used, which means that there had to be three different kinds of weapons. So we assumed that there was three people that was involved in the shooting. But we had no idea who did it, where they were at. We had no idea what the motivation might be.
They were really not sure of why these kids would have been killed. Was it some kind of a revenge thing? They found a little tiny bit of marijuana on the scene. Was it some kind of a drug deal? They didn't know. Mike Hadrath was my childhood best friend. Lived two blocks from me. We played baseball together. We played basketball together. A heck of an athlete. He did 42 pull-ups in sixth grade, a record that stood for 25 years.
The Beatty brothers were close family. Stuart Beatty played the guitar between he and his brother. They could only afford the one guitar, so whenever he had time, he would teach his younger brother.
Now, Roger Essam was somebody that everybody liked. Teachers liked him. You know, students liked him. He was just a very outgoing kind of a person, had a good personality, would always just stop and talk to anybody, would help you out in a heartbeat.
My mom and dad and I were having supper, and Mrs. Essam had called. Mrs. Essam told them that there was an occurrence at the park, and they had heard that there was kids that had been killed. There had been a shooting, and that Mike had been shot, and that he was dead. And it was just, I couldn't understand how something like that happened. You know, they went out to the park. But why would he have been shot and his friend shot? It just didn't make any sense to me. It's like he was just here. How can he be gone? It's really hard to describe how, you know, in a 10-year-old's mind, how I can be. It's just like your whole world just turned upside down, just in a flip of a switch. He was gone.
Law enforcement had to go to each of the families. Did they know anything? Did their kids have enemies? Had they had a problem with somebody?
The BCI agents and the homicide investigators out of Sioux Falls, they don't have much to go on at all. They've got dead bodies. They can tell they've been shot with shotguns. The families haven't given them any leads.
There was a panic that spread through the community. It was hard enough to remember the last time one murder had taken place. People who previously hadn't locked their doors started locking their doors. When they went out to do their chores, they started bringing a gun with them.
It was so scary. We lived in a pretty sheltered environment back in 1973 in the Midwest. You just didn't have kids murdered. Young kids. Young teenagers. What's the motive? Do you have serial killers running around that are just homicidal maniacs? Why would somebody do this? And then all of a sudden, a young teenage girl walks into the Sioux Falls, South Dakota police station and says, "I was out at Gitche Manitou." Who is this teenage girl? What is her connection with this thing?
On the afternoon after the murders, a 13-year-old girl walked into the police station. Her name is Sandra Chesky. What did she know about it and how was she involved? Every time she told her story, she told it the same way. Stuart and the other boys, they had driven out to pick up Sandra. They drove to Gitche Manitou.
They got a roaring fire going, and they're just sitting around and having a good time.
Did you guys hear something?
You're not used to being in the woods, are you?
They see three shadowy figures appear about 15 yards away.
Hello? Hello, is anybody there?
There was a blast of a shotgun. Roger fell. There was another blast. Stuart started yelling.
I'm shot!
They had the kids follow them along a path. They ended back up at a place where there was a truck, and then one of the men took Sandra in his pickup, and they drove away.
He tells her that they're law enforcement agents, they're on drug raids, and that her friends were shot with a tranquilizer gun. And then he turns to her and he says, "Tell me where you live, I'll take you home."
So we read your statement. It says right here that you said that these men said they were cops, that those shots you heard were tranquilizer guns. Did anything about that seem odd to you?
It sounds just bizarre. It's unbelievable. Who would believe this story? Three men don't just come out of nowhere and kill four people for no reason and then let one of the people go, "Oh, I'm going to drive you home. I killed four of your friends, but let me take you home." That doesn't make any sense.
Why would one teenager be allowed to live when four others were murdered? Why would they leave a living witness?
Let's start by stating your first name.
Some law enforcement people didn't believe her story. They simply didn't believe that she could be thinking that her friends were shot with a tranquilizer gun when she saw the blood and everything else that was going on that night. She was eventually given a couple of polygraph exams.
What is your street address?
It's hard when you're not believed. You just really can't even comprehend it. They think that I know the people that did this. They think I'm in on it. They think that I must know something.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
It's gonna be a good night, guys.
No. It's kind of creepy out here.
Nah, come on, Sandra. There's nothing to worry about.
Okay. Just promise me you won't leave me alone out here.
Of course. I promise. Don't worry about that.
Roger was my first boyfriend. He called me and asked me if I wanted to go out. And I didn't really know anything about Gitche Manitou, so I didn't know how far it was. Or I may have hesitated a little bit to go that far. Roger's friend Stuart and his brother Dana was along, as well as Mike Hadrath.
Did you guys hear something?
You're not used to being in the woods, are you?
What if it's a bear?
Not a bear, probably just a deer.
You know, I know what we need. Yeah. Let's see. This. Take the edge off.
Oh.
You want to try?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like this?
Yeah, just...
We didn't have anything to drink at all, but the boys had brought a joint and passed that around, and that was actually the first time I smoked pot.
You okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that'll do it.
I got to be real close with Roger, and he had his arm around me. Stuart was playing the guitar, and it was just a night that you'd want to last forever, really.
Oh, yeah, I heard that. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah.
And that's when everything changed. At first, it was not a big deal because, you know, we figured it was animals or something. It continued so long that Roger and Stuart decided to go see what the noises were.
We'll be right back.
Let's go.
Okay.
Roger gave me a kiss right before he left and said he'd be right back.
Let's do it.
Someone there?
Hello?
Hello?
They don't even get very far, and they call out.
Hello?
Who's there?
Who's there? Hello? Who's out there? And nobody answers.
Hello? Hello?
God!
And that's when it just all goes crazy.
I'm in!
Stuart starts screaming that he's hit, and Roger doesn't make any more sounds at all.
This is the police. Narcotics.
They identified themselves as police officers. The only thing I could think of was that marijuana had gotten us in trouble. Mike is asking them what's going on and who do they think they are and, you know, what are they doing?
Hey, man, who the hell do you think?
Shots rang out again and Mike was hit.
Get up.
Yeah, quit your faking. You ain't fooling anyone.
I said, get up. You too.
Junior, keep your sights on these guys.
You got it, boss.
There's one man that is called the boss, and he's the one that's telling us to come away from the camp and come up the trail. JR was the heavyset short one, and the third one was a thinner, blonde-haired guy, and he was called Hatchet Face.
Hey, Hatchet Face, keep an eye on the boys. I'll see you both back at the farm later. You're coming with me, girlie.
What's going on? Is Roger okay?
He'll be fine in the morning. These guns aren't real. They're just tranquilizers.
The boss said that the shots were tranquilizer gun, I thought, oh, okay.
What are we gonna do about you? You gotta listen to me. You gotta do exactly what I say. Get in the truck.
He tells me that I'm young and he's gonna try and get me out of this mess and, you know, just follow what he says and he'll try and help me. The boss assisted me in getting in the front seat of the pickup truck. They're separating me now from the boys. I turn around and I just get my last glimpse of the boys. I don't know how long we drove around. He pulls into a old farmhouse with a great big open field and driveway. I was hoping to see the boys, but I didn't see them.
Don't you make a move, little girl. I'll be right back.
Look at this.
I expect the boss to come back to the truck, but instead of him, one of the other guys, JR, did. He was creepy. Gruff, mean, tells me to take off my clothes. And I just didn't know what to do, and I hesitated, so he started pulling my clothes off me. I kind of was able to somehow separate my body from what was going on.
All right.
All right. You boys go clean those bodies in the park. I'll take care of the girl.
You got it.
Finish it.
Hey. That wasn't so bad, was it? All right. Come on. Go check out this old house over here, huh? What do you say?
Maybe we can find some critters.
That scared me so bad. I would 100% think that that's where he was gonna kill me, was in that house with that club.
Come on, let's go. Come on. No, come on. No. Come on. Hey. Let's go. Come on. Hey. No, come on.
I just don't want to go in there. I don't want to go.
I said, get out of me.
For some reason, he relents and he doesn't make me go in that house.
All right. Let's go. Get back in the truck.
He says he's going to take me home. I just want to listen to what he says and get home so I can check on the boys. I just want to get home.
So this is the place?
We get there.
Now I know where you live.
And he told me not to tell anybody anything or he'll come back and kill me.
All right. Looks like everything's checked out.
Can I see Roger now? Is he okay?
Sandra, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but those men were not police officers. And those definitely weren't tranquilizer guns. Your friends aren't coming back. They're gone.
I realize that my friends are gone, and I just want to know why. It's like something being dropped on you and smashing you all the way to the ground. It's just total disbelief. That's when my mom comes and we just rush together. And I just remember, you know, seeing her and she puts her arms around me and we both start crying. The police department ended up sending me to the detention center because that was the only place that they could think of where I would be protected and safe because these men were on the loose. These were killers, and I was the only witness.
We had three guys out there who had killed her friends and her boyfriend. And now they're going to probably try to find her to kill her, because that's the only witness against them. So we had to put her in a safe location.
The first night in protective custody at the detention center was a nightmare. I don't know how I even fell asleep. I was just thinking about the boys, and I just wanted to be with them, and I was imagining in my mind what they had went through. All I can see is the faces of my friends. That last glimpse of them standing and walking with someone with a gun. And of course, the last moment I had with Roger was when he gave me a kiss and told me he'd be right back.
Sandra, tell us everything you remember about that truck.
It turned out that Sandra Chesky was a very strong young lady.
It was an old pickup truck. It was brown. And I remember it had a gun rack on the back.
I sat down with her for a couple hours and drew sketches based on her recollection. She described the boss man's truck as an older model, Chevrolet. She remembered it had a gun rack in the back window. It had a really strange looking glove compartment up front. It had a cracked windshield.
His face was thinner here, and his hair was shorter on the sides and more wavy up top.
I drew a sketch of the place where she was sexually molested. And then we did a grid mark within 50 miles of the radius of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to see if they recognized something as they were driving these grids. If they did, they brought it back into the control center. And then somebody would pick up Sandra and take her to that location to see if that was the place where she was at.
We just spent days trying to find that farm and drove and drove and drove. That's all there was we need to find this farmhouse so we can find these men.
All they've got to go on is this composite sketch, a description of the pickup truck, and a sketch of an abandoned farm. They keep driving her out day after day. Another abandoned farm. Nope, that's not the place. Another abandoned farm.
Sometimes there was frustration. I remember one day I was driving with the sheriff and he pulled the car over.
What about that place?
No, I don't think that's it.
I know you know who these guys are. I want you to tell me right now.
And I looked at him and I was like, oh, and you know, you're not believing me. And I just wouldn't even talk to him. I wouldn't deal with it. But at that moment, it was just like, how can you not believe me?
It was difficult. We didn't sleep hardly at all. We were out there running leads trying to find these guys. I mean, we were working many, many, many hours a day. It bothered us like it did everybody else that we couldn't find these guys. And we were running down every lead we could in order to bring them to justice.
Fewer leads are starting to come in. And then one day they got a call about an abandoned farm that was northwest of Sioux Falls.
I was in the car with two officers driving down more country roads trying to find the farmhouse. I'm beginning to lose hope.
Once they arrived at this location, Sandra said, well, that looks similar to what I remember. And they were going to get out and look at the buildings and see if she could remember some more.
That's him! That's him!
All of a sudden, I look out my window and there's a pickup driving the opposite way past us, and it's the boss. I just start screaming, that's him, that's the boss. I remember being pushed down and they pull over. I'm taken out of the car.
Sandra is off to the side of the road now. The other investigator takes off at full force. He does a U-turn. He's squealing down the road. Dust is flying behind him. He is taking off after this pickup truck.
About a quarter of a mile down the road, he pulls the vehicle over. He gets out and approaches the vehicle.
Put your hands on the wheel. Keep him where I can see him.
What'd I do wrong, officer?
I couldn't have been speeding.
The truck completely matches the description that Sandra gave. There's a crack in the windshield. The inspection sticker is right where she said it would be. The dashboard lights are the color that she described them.
What's your name, son?
Fryer. Alan Fryer. But honestly, I don't know what this all is about.
There's a tall, thin man who meets the description of the boss, and he asks for some identification and asks what the guy's name is, and the man identifies himself as Alan Fryer.
Alan was brought into the Sioux Falls Police Department where we had our control center, our command center. Alan's personality was different. He was kind of happy-go-lucky, just kind of the old farm kid that liked to talk and tell stories.
You know why we're here, don't you? We're investigating the murders at Gitche Manitou.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about those. It's a shame what happened to those kids out there.
He denied even being at Gitche Manitou at that time.
Hey, look, I know Gitche Manitou. You know, I know that place like the back of my hand. But y'all got the wrong guy here. Yeah, I wouldn't hurt a fly.
Alan, where were you the night of November 17th?
I can't remember, but I mean, I sure as hell wasn't at Gitche Manitou. I think I was out hunting with my brothers, James and David.
The Fryer brothers were three of 13 children. Alan Fryer was the oldest of those three brothers. He worked as a farmhand at different locations, which was very common at the time.
24-year-old David has had a long history of violence. When he was a teenager, he was caught with another friend shooting at people with a .22 rifle out of the window of a vehicle.
James Fryer, the youngest, JR, there was something off about him. He didn't smile. He made people uncomfortable. He did not have good social skills. He was scary. He seemed the most sociopathic out of the three brothers.
Now I have to pick them out of a lineup. And I was a little bit scared because I didn't want to be that close to them again.
That's them. That's the boss. That's Hatchet Face over there.
I had no problem picking them out. It was that one, that one, that one. You know, I never hesitated for a moment.
And that's JR.
You just won't ever forget someone's face during something like that. It becomes the face in your nightmares. I wanted to point them out. I wanted them to be arrested. I wanted them to pay.
David Fryer fairly early decides he's going to plead guilty. And that's how we got a lot of information. David Fryer started telling everything that happened that night. They decide to go out to Gitche Manitou. They're going to poach a deer. That's why they had double-odd buckshot that night. Double-odd buckshot can take down a deer. But the hunt turned away from deer and it went towards teenage kids.
Oh, like this?
Yeah, just like that.
Okay, I've never done this before.
We got pot. Well, isn't that interesting? You know what's more fun than hunting deer?
Let's do it. Let's crash the party.
Someone there?
Hello?
Hello?
Sandra saw Alan Fryer with the shotgun up to his shoulder when the first shot went off and Roger fell down. David confirmed that. He said Alan Fryer was the first one to pull the trigger and then James started shooting.
Ah! I'm in!
This is the police. Narcotics.
Hey man, why are y'all doing this? Why are y'all coming out here?
David also told us that after the boss left with Sandra, that James and David got in to Stewart's van, put the headlights on bright. Then James jumped out with his shotgun and started shooting. Dana was the first one to get shot, then Stewart, then Mike. And then David said that he did shoot Stewart Beatty while he was laying on the ground. But of course, David said that Stewart was already dead when he pulled the trigger.
David pled guilty to three counts of murder and one count of manslaughter and received a sentence of life in prison.
I was happy because, you know, I wouldn't have to go in the courtroom and go through that trial. But there was still two more. I didn't know what was going to happen next.
James and Alan are going to plead not guilty. So they're being housed in the Lyon County Jail. Lo and behold, I get up one morning and it's all over the radio, all over the news. Alan and James Fryer have escaped from jail. Where are these guys at? They're on the loose. The Lyon County Jail was an old jail, but they had just had some new locks placed on the jail doors. Well, somebody had forgotten to bring a welder in and weld the nuts onto the bolts of the new locks. Alan Fryer saw that. So at night, he got a piece of sturdy wire off his bed and he shaped it in the form of a ratchet. And that's how they escaped.
After we got word that the Fryer brothers had escaped jail, we were obviously very concerned for Sandra Chesky because these were killers. I mean, they killed four boys in the park, and she was a live witness who could put them in jail for the rest of their lives.
We needed people to stand watch and make sure that they didn't come through with their promise that if I told anyone, they would kill me.
She lived in a rural area, and we had to somehow or other protect her. We sat in their house all night long with our sawed-off shotguns, waited to see if they're going to show up or not.
Now there's a manhunt that went nationwide for Alan and James Fryer. They stole the vehicle in Rock Rapids, and they started heading west. They get all of the way across South Dakota. They're into Wyoming, almost 500 miles away. And in typical Fryer fashion, they hit a pedestrian that's walking across the street in Gillette, Wyoming. The description of the vehicle is seen. They get a high-speed chase going, and they're apprehended in Wyoming 2 days later.
When they were recaptured, it was up and down screaming in joy, and they've got them again. Now we can breathe.
The prosecution team decided not to charge James Fryer with the sexual assault on Sandra Chesky. They didn't want to put Sandra through a rape trial. They told Sandra that, no, we're going to get him for first-degree murder. He's never going to see the light of day again.
At first, I was a little upset that JR was not going to get charged with the rape, and I had to let that go. But he knows it happened. I know it happened.
Sandra Chesky testified, talk about a strong person. You know, those were back in the days when counseling wasn't readily given. She faced everybody. There were times she was on the witness stand for over two straight hours testifying. And boy, did she nailed the Fryer brothers with her testimony.
We're elated that they were convicted and that they had to serve life in prison. All three of them. It was just a relief to know that they were going to pay for what they did. This has affected me in a lot of different ways, not having Mike there. When I see pictures of him, he's always my big brother. He doesn't look like a 15-year-old kid. He's my big brother. I keep his memory alive by talking about him. I feel that he needs to not be forgotten. He's still there. He's right in our hearts, and he's never going away. They were all good kids. They had everything to live for. And it was just taken away from them. And I just hope people remember who those boys were, that they were good kids. They were good kids.
Sandra, one more comment.
Get you,
girl.
Stay back.
No comment.
There's a media frenzy around Sandra Chesky. The journalists are just camping out, trying to get a picture of the elusive Gitche girl. The girl from the Gitche Manitou mass murders.
I'm told, just put your head down. They won't be able to get your picture, you know, because they want to snap those shots. That's what the press does. And so walk with your head down and they won't be able to get your picture. Consequently, I walked with my head down for the next 25 years. Some people didn't believe me, even, you know, some of the high school students. And now I'm a bad kid. It's just a new big issue I'm going to have to deal with for a long time. I was shamed. You know, I felt ashamed because I lived, actually. I should have been with the boys. Nobody seemed to care that I did everything I could. Some still believed I was a part of it.
She's a strong person. Tough little girl from Gitche. Having to live with that night, the horrors and the evils of that night. It's hard. Hard for me. Because I'm a teacher. I work with teenagers. I know how important those teenage years are. And so, for me, that's the hardest thing.
I decided to tell the story of what happened at Gitche Manitou, and being able to tell the story was when I started to heal, and I could lift my head up, and I wasn't ashamed anymore. It's always there. And they're always there. You know, you don't have to dig too deep to find it. You miss them forever. You can never sweep it away. It's actually freeing now to tell my story, and I like to tell it because I get to tell what heroes the boys were.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.